Welcome to Happy Hour. It feels so good to move. We live so much of our lives in our head. You know we do. From the neck up in the attic, we're always working on something to save the world. But from the neck down is where the answers are that we're all looking for anyway. The answers to why we're here and what we love and who we are and what's what, they're all downstairs. And when we go downstairs, from the neck down, the interesting thing is that's where our passion is. That's where our desires are. That's where our answers are. That's where we feel our intuitive sense that compels us to move in a certain direction. We want to be downstairs in a world that tells us being upstairs is where it's at. Learning and thinking and intellectualizing and rationalizing, there's a place for this. You need to know where you put your keys so you can leave your house and whether your glasses are on your head or lost somewhere in the apartment. But if you're looking for answers deeper than that, then get yourself down into your body, and nothing grounds you down into your body than being in it, more than just being in it. Ernest Holmes was a great teacher of science of mind. He said something so interesting. He said, don't be praying in your head. Don't keep your prayers silently to yourself. If you're going to be praying, pray out loud. Stand up when you pray, and pray out loud. And what begins to happen that you don't even realize is going to begin to happen is you begin to breathe life into your prayers. They're not some intellectual exercise anymore. Your prayers have the life of your breath in them. They have the desire, the fire of desire you feel in your body. They have the energy of your physical self pumped into them, and you begin to do something that's so different than just thinking your prayers. You begin to feel your own prayers. You begin to put your feelings, pour your feelings into your prayer. When you pour your feelings into your prayer and you can hear them and you can feel them, because we think, God, doesn't anybody in the universe, doesn't the universe hear me? It does. The question is, do you? Doesn't anybody feel the pain that I'm feeling right now? The entire net of heaven does. The question is, do you? When you feel your prayers, when you feel your need, when you feel your desires, you have ignited within that desire the energy that locomotes those words from thought into thing. And we think, I can think my way there. And the fact is, the thinking does not have the energy that the feeling of the body does. And you want to bring your prayer life down into your body. So stand up when you pray. Chant. What you were saying, let me be in rhythm with the rhythm of life, for those of you who don't know, is Nam-myoho-renge-kyo. And that's what you're saying. You're saying, let me be in rhythm with the rhythm of life. In the last series that we did that was called A Way of Life That Works, A Way of Life That Works, which was so good. Oh, my God. Let me just have said it for you. It was so good. It was 12 weeks. It was so good. And where we began was with a very simple illustration that you're going to find everywhere you turn in the teachings. And what it does is it talks to you about you as the wave in the ocean of consciousness that is the universe. You as the wave, which means you have all the properties of the ocean. Everything about the ocean is true in you and as you and expressing as you, because you can't have a wave separate from the ocean in which it exists. And let me be in rhythm with the rhythm of life is saying, let me as a wave in the ocean, an individualization of the ocean, be in rhythm with the rhythm of the ocean. Because, man, you can defeat a wave, but you cannot defeat the ocean. Let me be in rhythm. Let me move with the flow of life instead of against the flow. And what this entire path is about, this path of life, a way of life that works, is what it says is, if you want to insist on being a wave all by yourself and do your life as a wave, well, go ahead and do that. You can do that. But life's going to be so hard. What you might want to consider doing, and that's where all the teachings come in. These aren't modern teachings. These teachings cross-pollinate philosophy, religion, East, West, all the mystical traditions, they said the same thing. Why don't you just access the ocean that you are, that dwells inside of you? Then when you go out into your life, you're moving with the power of the ocean. Why don't you just remember the ocean that you are, that you're living in, that dwells within you? Then when you go out, you're accessing the wisdom of that ocean. Why do you have to go out as a wave unless you insist, when you can go out as the entirety of the ocean of consciousness? That is God, that is the universe, that is life, that is Tao, that is the all in all. Why not access that? And we have that choice. We have that choice. There is an old story told about a great wrestler in Japan. And this wrestler could beat anybody. All the other students, all the other visitors. He was a wrestler who was practically unbeatable. He could beat, they said, his teacher. But in public, his own young pupils could throw him. In private, he was so strong, but when it came to a wrestling match, he could not only beat his teacher nor his colleagues, his own pupils beat him. His name was Onami, and Onami meant great wave. Great wave. So he was in a predicament. We reach a place in our life where we can't go any further. We're in a predicament. We know that we're good at something. We know we have the possibility of doing it. We know we have the skill set for it. And yet, in public, he goes out in public and every one of his pupils can beat him. So here is what he does. In his trouble, he goes to a Zen master who was stopping at a nearby temple by the sea, and he asks for counsel. And you will notice in so many of these stories that when you're in trouble, instead of trying to figure it out all by yourself, seek help. It's not a big deal, even though we live in the West and there's kind of a feeling that you should kind of figure everything out by yourself. And if you don't, you're not really a man or a woman who can pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and there's some kind of shame attached. Just call somebody and get some help, for God's sakes. In every story, when someone is in trouble, they go visit someone a little wiser than them, and they go get help. I was working in the basement of somebody's church in New York City, okay? In a very beautiful church, and I was in the basement teaching. And I had like 25 people. The first year, I think we had 25 people. Maybe we went up in the first year and a half to 40. It was downstairs. It was in Chelsea. It was 9:30 in the morning. I mean, in Chelsea, people are coming back from the bars at 9:30, right? They're not going to church at 9:30 in the morning to go hear a class on deeper teachings, hardly. It then went to 150, and I'm pointing to Cheryl because she was there, and then we went up to 200, and then we went up to 250, and nothing changed. And I point to Cheryl because she was our bouncer. Who better than the vice president of Chase Manhattan Bank? I hope I can say that. That's what she was, the vice president. I thought, well, she's an important person, I'll put her at the door, right? People won't barge in, and we had to have a bouncer at the door because there were so many people in the class, we had to cut off at a certain number and just put a little sign out that said sold out. So in the meantime, in that year, some wonderful things happened. We bought a house out in the country so we could get away on during the week because we were working on weekends. And it was just a lovely time. I was working in somebody else's church, which meant they had the headaches. They had all the worries about volunteers. They had to pay the bills. They had to pay the rent. They had the leaky roof. And I just showed up like a little princess on Sunday morning. And I just did my class, which lasted all of 45 minutes. And then I worked with some people individually, and it was a beautiful life in somebody else's basement. Somebody else's basement. I was doing my work in somebody else's basement, but that did not strike me as odd because I thought this is like the easiest job I have ever had, and I could see myself retiring on having an easy job like this, because who wants to work hard if you don't have to, right? So he goes and he gets counsel from somebody wiser than him. A master shows up and he goes to him at a nearby temple by the sea, and the master says this, "Onami," he says, "great waves is your name. So stay in this temple by the sea tonight and listen to the waves of the sea." Listen to the waves of the sea. And then imagine you are those waves. Forget you are a wrestler and become those huge waves sweeping everything before them. Now, pause, and let's go over here to China, because we're a very international group. In China, there's a story that's told about a man who was a great horseman. He took care of horses, he broke them in, he handled them so well, he became legend in his little town. And he had a beautiful herd of horses, and one day, one of the horses by itself got loose, and it ran away, and it went through the great wall to the other side where an adversarial group called the Hue tribe lived, and they were not friendly to the Chinese at all, which meant his horse was as good as lost, and everybody in his neighboring village looked at him and came to his house and felt so much sympathy for him, because not only did he lose his horse, he lost the money that went with it. And they came to him with all their sympathy and they said, "We are so sorry about what has happened to you in losing your horse." And he responded in an interesting way. He said, "Well, Siong," that's his name, "Siong has lost a horse. But who knows if this is a blessing or a misfortune." We look at the wrestler and we say, here is a great wrestler who in public cannot even beat his pupils. This is a misfortune. We look at the fact that this has happened to him, and right away we come to him like the villagers do and say, this is a terrible misfortune that has happened to you. That's what our eyes tell us. We're rocking out in this class downstairs in the basement until one day I get a notice on Monday through the email and through a fax saying, the class is closed. The 250-person class that just rocked so hard that we needed a bouncer in order to keep the gay men in Chelsea out of this class, right? You know when they want to get in, they're getting in, right? The class was closed without further notice, without any notice. The class was closed. The work I did individually with people in the office was closed. The workshops I was doing was closed. It was over. The door was closed. Onami couldn't win one round against a pupil, and it looked like a misfortune. And all of a sudden, here we are sitting with this new piece of property. We have a lovely country house, sometimes as lesbians do. And we were just thinking, this is just so wonderful. I'm loving being in the basement. And all of a sudden, the rug is pulled out from under you. All of a sudden, you're laid off. All of a sudden, you're fired. It happens every single day to people we know, if not to us, many times. It happened, hello, to Steve Jobs, fired from his own company. He's the first to say it. He started a company, had issues with the board of directors, and they threw him out of the company that he started. It happens all the time. And we think, oh, well, Steve Jobs, that's a fascinating story. However, when it happens to us, it's not fascinating. We go home, it doesn't feel fascinating at all. What is fascinating about the fact that you got booted out of something you were loving doing, and it didn't make any sense at all? And to boot, to add insult to injury, he was a wrestler that could in private beat his teachers, but in public, he couldn't even beat his pupils. It didn't make a difference that this class was wildly successful and financially very successful for the church. It didn't make a difference, and it didn't make sense. But who knows whether it is a blessing or a misfortune? Because all the villagers came around Siam and thought, this is a terrible thing that you have lost your horse. And yet, when the wrestler goes to the master in the temple in the sea, he says to him, the first order of business is, here's what you need to do. He didn't say, go get a lawyer, right? He said, you need to do this thing first. You need to spend the night at the temple by the sea and listen. And for a wrestler, I don't think listening is actually the thing that they are adept at doing. I'm not sure that listening is something that we are adept at doing, because the moment we have an issue, the moment something bad happens, the moment seemingly something really unfortunate happens, sometimes we get on the horn and we can't wait to share this information of, can you believe what happened to me? And he said, you don't do any of that. You listen. We want to talk about it. We want to share about it. We want to moan about it. I frankly want to drink about it. We want to do different things about it, but I'm not sure listening is the thing we want to do. And when I got the email saying that you can no longer do any of these things, it's over, without explanation, without anything, I, of course, the first thing I did was not think I need to listen. The first thing I did was I thought, okay, let me get into action and let me figure out what to do, because we now have a house and an apartment in New York, and I've got to figure out how to pay our mortgage. That's the first. You go right into action, man. You are like, woo! You are fast forward into getting those gears spinning up in your head, trying to figure out how to make this work. How to make it work. Because I had contracted with someone who I knew, a colleague of mine, who asked me to come up to teach her yoga group, which she was bringing up into the mountains to a Zen monastery. And I had contracted that very next day I had to be up there and I had to be teaching them for 3 days. And I thought, oh my God, this is like the worst thing you could possibly ask me to do right now, because I got to figure out how to fix this situation and make something happen. Because the first thing that happens when you get laid off, when you get fired, when a hardship happens, is we want to take action and figure something out. And what did the master at the temple of the sea say? Listen. I had contracted months ago to go up and teach this group of people. She was going to do yoga with them all day, and I was going to teach deeper teachings at night, the lessons and philosophies like we do here in the evening in this beautiful Zen monastery. So I didn't have time to take action, to make something happen. And look what listening is. Listening is not active. Listening is not like looking. When you're looking, that's active. In fact, they say if you can look at somebody for 3 seconds, and that's okay. But if you look at them for more than 3 seconds, it's staring. That is not cool, right? Staring is not cool. You have now trespassed when you're looking at somebody longer than 3 seconds. Hearing, listening, totally different story. You can listen all you want. These portals are always open. It is so receptive. You're entering into an energy of receptivity, and you become a passageway through which information can come. Information from who? It's interesting that the temple's at the sea. Information from the ocean. You see, when we forget we're the ocean, we think we're all about being the wave, and you can't remember both at the same time. When you remember the ocean, you forget you're the wave. When you remember you're the wave, you forget that you're the ocean. And when something happens, we go right into wave mode, right into action. And what did he say? He said, don't act. Listen, there's nothing to do. Listen, open, be receptive. It is the yin, divine mother energy. It means receive, open yourself, yield. It is the part of us that is the womb that takes something in, that doesn't give something out, because we think the answer to every problem is doing something. And he said, don't do something. I'm heading off to the Zendo, and I can't do anything about our situation. And if you would ask me, I just wished I could have gotten out of that ridiculous, preposterous requirement of mine, because I had work to do. I had to figure this out. So up to the Zendo I go, and into the monastery room, Onami goes. And in China, time goes by, and the horse returns. And not only does the horse return, the one that left, he returns with a companion. And he brings back with him a fabulous steed from the Hu tribe, right, the enemy tribe, and it's a great horse. So everybody in the village comes together, and they come to congratulate him. Now it's like, oh my God, look, you have this. Now you have two horses. You've just doubled your finances. This is a great thing. And Sayong says this. He says, Sayong has gained a horse. But who can say if this is a blessing or a misfortune? I head off to the Zendo, and that night I discover that in the Zendo I do my work, and I do it as consciously as I can, trying to put everything else about what I should be doing out of my mind, and I discover the sleeping arrangements are very interesting. Sleeping arrangements are that everybody sleeps in the Zendo but the visiting guest lecturer, which is me. I get to sleep in the woods in a cabin all by myself, which is great if you like, you know, animals in the woods. Feeling comfortable coming in and out of your cottage. So I was honored because I was given my own place where everybody was in one place, and my place you could only find with a flashlight far away from the Zendo up a trail. But I was honored, and when they showed me the place in the afternoon, the lovely gentleman who showed it to me brought me in, and I was glued to the weather stripping around the front door that seemed to have been gnawed, you know, almost to its last sliver of rubberiness. And I said, what do you think might have, like, eaten all of the rubber weather stripping around the front door? And he said, well, we are in the woods after all. And I am not, trust me when I tell you, I am not a woodsy type of a lesbian. I am not that kind of a lesbian, okay? There are those kinds, but that is not the kind that I am. On top of which, an interesting thing about me was that had years prior, I had had a phobia. And I had had one of those crippling phobias that, and anybody who has a phobia will understand, it's not a fear. It is so to the nth degree beyond what fear is. A phobia cripples you. Whether you see the thing you're afraid of or not, whether you encounter it or not, you are paralyzed with the fear that you might at some point. So the fear does not abate when you are safely out of harm's way what you are afraid of or terrified of. There is always the potential that you will bump into it. So every day when you wake up in the morning, for anybody who has a phobia, and certainly for me, my first thought was to look at the floorboards for any mice that might be in the room, because mice was my phobia. Good luck, New York City subway system under every apartment. Like, you know, why don't you just move? Because there's never going to come a day you're not going to see see mice in New York City. It's not going to happen. But this is where I live. And checking the floorboards was my morning meditation. It's the first thing I did every morning. Never thought twice about it. So I'm out in the woods. And I give my first talk and I make my way back to where I'm supposed to go. To my own cabin all by myself in the woods. And Onami is sitting in the temple by the sea. And he sits in his little room. And look, it's a monastery room, which means there's not going to be much furnishings and much to look at and distract you. No flat screen TVs. You know, nothing to plug in. There's practically nothing there. There's a cot and a table, maybe an altar. That's it. And he sits. And he remained there. And he tried to think only of the waves, because that's what he's supposed to think of. He's supposed to listen and think of the waves. That's all. Listen and think of the waves. And what are we told on this path? When something goes wrong, when the rug is pulled out from under you, when you're fired, and it seemed like I was fired from my job, it did not occur to me, nor does it ever occur to us in the moment, that we're being fired from our old life. We're being fired from our smaller life. That does not go through our mind. What it's like is, look what you did to me. You fired me. I hate you. That's where we go. And what we're told, what Onami was told, was sit and listen to the ocean. See, when we're caught up in this wave consciousness, you did this to me and I did this to you, we actually don't know what's really happening. We're using only the tiniest percent of our own individual mind. When we sit and listen, what we're going to start to hear is a voice that is still and small at first, but it is going to grow into a roar once we start listening. And listening seems counterintuitive because we should be acting and making something happen because, hello, who's going to pay our mortgage? But the fact is we need to stop and engage with the ocean that we are, or else we're forever a measly little wave trying to figure it out all by ourselves, which we can't. How many times must we prove that to ourselves? So he sits and he tries to think only of the waves, but he thought of many things, right? So please, if you're ever asked to meditate, understand you're not alone if your mind does not immediately go to Shakti. And then you're sitting there for 15 minutes in the light of awareness, silently meditating, and you get up and you literally are levitating off the frickin' floor. Doesn't happen. You're sitting, and what happens is in 5 seconds, if you make it 5 seconds, your mind's somewhere else. If you even make it 5 seconds, like you sit down the moment you decide, I'm going to sit and I'm going to listen. I'm going to really listen now. And you get like 2 seconds into it. Tell me this isn't true. 2 seconds. You do what he tried to think of the wave. We try and listen to the ocean, to the deeper mind, to that which is within us that is us. Because that's the answer. See, that's the answer. As a wave, we need to dive down and encounter that ocean consciousness. Because if we do, the only thing we can figure out is how am I going to fix this or make this better or talk him out of it or do something. When we listen and we encounter the ocean, we discover there's a whole other story entirely, entirely, gradually. In a story of this magnitude, gradually could be like hours later. Gradually, he did think only of the waves. And they rolled larger and larger as the night went on. When we begin to put our mind with the intention of turning within and going deep down to the edge of us being me as a wave and drop down deeper into me being a wave in the ocean as the ocean, when we go past that threshold from the I to the I am, when we go past that place from thinking we are all by ourselves to we are connected, something happens. I am in the cabin that night. I open the door. I have my own flashlight. I'm by myself. It's like 7:30, 8 o'clock when the classes are over. I walk in. I swing open the door. And there, because once you have had a phobia, and I was over my phobia by this point, but once you have a phobia, whatever it is you were terrified of, you are now an expert in. I walk in the door to this little Zendo cottage, which was little but beautifully appointed, And like right where that wall is, I see on the counter by the toaster. So with my one good eye, I saw one turd sitting by the toaster, and I knew there was no way I was going to sleep in this cabin for one living second. I turned around, didn't even walk over the threshold, and ran through the woods in my heels to the Zendo to knock on the door of the girl, my colleague, who had asked me to do this job, knowing she would never hire me again. I knew that because I was knocking on her door to tell her we were going to sleep together in her room because I was not going to my cottage, move over. Right? I was going into her room. She didn't know me that well, but I was going to her room. We were going to sleep together in her room because I surely wasn't going back there. And by the morning, I got a message that was so clearly from me. And it was so not the message I expected, because you know what I expected? Had I been left to my own devices, I would have sat down and called everybody I knew and worked out a way in which they would allow me to teach a class in their basement of their church. That was my biggest thought of how I could fix what had happened to me. I'll just recreate what I did, and I will bring a very successful class to the basement of their church and bring in new people and bring in new blood and bring in more money, and I will bring all these deliverables, but I couldn't think bigger than a basement in somebody else's church left to my own devices. So the son of the Chinese man, Cy Ang, gets on the horse one day, this wild steed, and he loves horses. He might not be as great as his dad working with horses. He gets on the horse, he has an accident, he breaks his foot, and the whole village comes together. They hear about this, and they all make their way to his house with sympathy, beating their breasts, saying, "Oh my God, this is the worst thing that could have happened to you. Your only son has broken his leg. This is terrible," they say. And he responds by saying, "Who knows? Who knows what is a blessing and what is misfortune?" So Onami is sitting in his monastery little room, and gradually he did think of the waves, and they rolled larger and larger as the night wore on, and then they swept away the flowers in the vases. They became so real. He was told to listen and imagine the waves. He began to hear them, and he began to imagine them. Look what he was told. Listen to that which is deeper, and then let your imagination grow fertile with what you're going to hear and what you're going to see, because you are encountering a mind greater than your own. You're encountering the ocean, the mind of the ocean. You're encountering, in other words, the mind of Tao, the mind of God, the mind of the universe. You are literally going so deep inside of yourself and the ground of your being that you are encountering the ground of all being. And when you do that, let it rip. Let yourself see what's being shown to you, because it's going to be so dramatically different than what you think. Because we take our old life, multiply it by two, and call it our new life. We take our old apartment, add a little square footage, and call it our better home. We don't know how to do anything but multiply it by two. When we encounter the ocean consciousness, when we encounter the mind of soul itself, it's got an idea that we've never even thought of. So he lets his imagination flow. And all of a sudden, he starts hearing the ocean and seeing the ocean. We let our imagination flow without criticism or without asking this question. Well, I don't know how that's going to happen. Well, I don't know how that's going to happen. Well, I don't know how I'm supposed to do that. Well, I don't know who's going to get me that thing. We don't ask the how. We let our imagination flow. Those were his instructions, and those are our instructions when our old life, when we're fired from our old life. And here's what happened. Gradually, he thought of the waves, and they rolled larger and larger as the night wore on. They swept away the flowers in the vases before the Buddha, and they swept away the vases entirely from the room. Even the bronze Buddha itself on the altar was swept away. And by dawn, the temple was only surging water, and Onami sat there with a faint smile on his face. He let himself be overcome by his imagination. What do they call it on this path? By his visualization, by his mind opening up and showing him as the ocean, not him as the wave with his problems, him as the ocean. That's why we sit in these rooms. That's why we read the books we read, to remember we're the ocean. Because when we remember we're the ocean, we see a dramatically different picture of who we are. We can't even imagine what that is. Can't even imagine. The next morning at the temple, I absolutely knew and heard and felt the waves overcome me of why it was I had months before agreed to teach at this place at the exact time when it felt counterintuitive, because I should have been busy worrying about how to fix my life. Because life had fired me from my life, so I had to recreate my life. But to recreate my life as a wave, I'd be doing it in somebody else's basement. Here's why my phobia that I thought I had healed years ago and had successfully healed years ago returned for one night only. The message that I received that evening, as clear as day, in July 2001, was that I needed to open a church in New York City on 9-9-01. That specific date, which happened to be 6 weeks from the time I was up at the Zendo, saying, what? You want me to what? So when the son broke his leg and all the villagers came around and sympathized, it wasn't a year later that the Hui tribe across the Great Wall came and invaded China and recruited all the sons from all the families and sent them to war. And in that fierce battle, 9 out of 10 of the young men were killed, but not Siong's son, because his foot was broken and they would not recruit him into war. Who knows what is a blessing and what is misfortune? Listen to this from the Tao. Tao alone becomes all things great and all things small. Everything is infused with life. Everything is infused with this ocean of consciousness. Everything great and small is one thing. Everything is one thing. It is the one in the many, and it is the many in the one. There is one thing we're dealing with when you get fired from your own life. There is one thing we're dealing with. Let Tao become all your actions. Sit, stop, listen, and let your imagination show you who you truly are. You're not a wave, you're a great wave. And you're not just a great wave, you're a great wave that is a great wave individualizing the ocean of consciousness that you are. It moves through you and expresses as you. Let Tao become all your actions, and then this is what's going to happen. Then your wants will become your treasure, and then your injury will become your blessing. then your injury will become, it will become your blessing. Not because you do some hoodoo or wear your pink glasses. It will become, your injury will become your blessing. I was told specifically to open a church in 6 weeks, a 9901, which meant for anybody who's ever opened a church, which meant you need music and you need a band and you need chairs and you need some kind of bookstore and you need books to go in it and you need volunteers, probably 2 or 3 dozen volunteers to make sure everybody's cared for. Not to mention you need a space in New York, and spaces in New York, you know you live in them, they're so dear. How can you afford even any of that, let alone do it in 6 weeks? And in 6 weeks, our doors were open down in Soho on 9901. We opened our doors and we had, I don't know, 50, 75 people who came. And when everything was done, we all stood by the doors, those who had put this together along with myself, and we stood by the door and we said, what the hell was that all about? Why'd we have to break our necks for 6 weeks to get this place open in time for what is the big deal? And 48 hours later, suddenly the date of 9/11 meant something that until 9/11 was just another day. Onami was sitting in his room, and he was sitting in his room the next morning with a smile on his face. And that day he entered the public wrestling contest and won every bout. And from that day to this, no one in Japan could ever throw him. From Steve Jobs, the heaviness of being successful when I was fired was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again. I became less sure about everything as a beginner. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life. I'm pretty sure none of this would have happened if I was not fired. It was an awful tasting medicine, but I guess the patient needed it. Being fired was the best thing that ever happened to me. Steve Jobs, August Gold, same quote. Being fired was the best thing. Stop, listen, and let your imagination flow. Let the ocean of mind that is your mind flow through you, wash through you. So that no longer do you think as a wave, but you begin to think as the ocean, and let yourself see what your creative imagination brings to you. And you will be amazed and you will be dazzled, and no longer will you look at the injury and come with sympathy for the injury, because when you are connected to the ocean that you are, you will know that every injury will indeed become your blessing. Enough said.